This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's considered the deadliest day on record when it comes to storms in Kansas City. And as we approach the spring storm season, myself and Diane Houston take a look back at the tornado that rolled through Kansas City and did some massive damage.
Well, I guess at this time of year, it's the spring storm season, and that's what we're talking about today, Diane, is the history of not one of, but the deadliest storm that's ever ripped through Kansas City, starting on the Kansas side and going all the way through Martin City way back in 1957. And we talk about devastating storms a lot, but this one wiped out basically all of South Kansas City, huh?
It was awful. I mean, I honestly, this was one of those stories when I decided to write about it. I was actually asked to write about it. Was one of the hardest things I've ever written because so many people are still alive that remember it. And if they didn't actually experience it, they went, you know, it was kind of a sightseeing adventure for a lot of Kansas Cityans too.
Really?
It's because, yeah, because afterwards, even though the National Guard was brought in, people wanted to see, you know, the news didn't really cover things like they cover it now. They wanted to see how devastating it was. I mean, my mom, my dad, both, you know, as kids can remember their parents taking them in the car and going to see if it was really as bad as it was, and it was awful. It's known today as the Ruskin Heights tornado because most of the victims really were taken in the Ruskin Heights area in South Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, and it's really, we're talking about May 20th, 1957. So we're talking about some time ago, but still kind of recent when it comes to history.
Really?
Writing about stuff about when Kansas City was founded, and now here you go, 1957, that's not long ago. But you're talking Ottawa, Spring Hill, Martin City, and as you mentioned, Ruskin Heights as well, where it just kind of, you know, went through and really destroyed everything in its way. And basically Martin City was left in shambles. And you know, you look at Martin City today, and that's not what it looked like pre-May 20th, 1950.
No, it didn't. It really, and I think that it's really important to remind people to think, why would it have destroyed? I mean, it would have destroyed things no matter where it would have gone. But it was really the fact there was no warning system. I mean, people just went about their business, and we all know that we like to pretend we're meteorologists in a storm, and we go outside and go, "Yo, the sky looks a little weird, you know, I smell rain, you know," and that's how people used to do it. I mean, it used to be kind of like a second hobby. People would go outside and go, "You know, the sky looks a little green today," and that was kind of what people that I talked to that lived through this remember, is that the sky just looked strange all day long. And the wind was just a little bit off and everything was a little off. And at this time we didn't have the National Weather Service. We had the Weather Bureau that was founded in 1950. So we really, you know, people go, how bad was the storm? If you were to, you know, cause we use an EF scale now, but this was back in the, you know, F scale days, the Fujita scale days. So it was an F5 tornado. I mean, this thing was no joke. It was about a half a mile wide by the time it crossed into Martin City. And it was, you know, nobody had any warning system. So you had television at the time. You had three major networks. This is happening at the smack dab in the middle of the dinner hour, which even worse. Yes, it started, it formed at 6:15 p.m., as you said, in Ottawa. And it really started busting through. You know, if you think about it, by the time it reaches the Ruskin Heights area, it's been an hour. Today, we would have like the, you know, the helicopter following the storm and we would know about it, but that's just not how it was in 1957. There was absolutely zero warning system. People were watching, you know, the 60, you know, I Love Lucy was on TV. They weren't interrupting to tell what the, you know, the weather was like at the time. It was just a completely different era. And that's what made this storm so devastating.
Well, I think what also makes it so devastating too is the way that kind of people lived back then. I mean, there were no basements. There was really nowhere to hide. I mean, it was kind of a new era of homes and whatnot. And people are running around going, where do I go? What do I do? And like, there was no safety net for a lot of people.
And that's exactly true, because it Ruskin Heights, part of the reason it was one of the most devastated areas, and even Martin City, to be fair, because you had storm shelters, possibly, you know, you could look at that. But the other problem was that a lot of these families that lived in, even farm families out in Ottawa and just south of Olathe and into Spring Hill and obviously Martin City, these were established families that had lived in the area, a lot of them for a very long time. So they didn't have mortgages. So they didn't have insurance, which is another brutal. Yeah, brutal. And the other part is that you had after the baby boomer era in 1957, you know, everybody's got 2.5 kids. They moved to Ruskin Heights because it's the place to go, because it's tract housing. They're putting up houses faster than, you know, and they're selling them. And so a lot of them are on slabs. And that's what caused another part of the devastation, was there was no place to go. I read lots of stories about the church in Martin City, which was built in 1890. It's now the site of the Martin Event Space. It was rebuilt after the 1957 tornado. They tore the church door down because it had already been damaged by fire a year before. But people like drove, they're like, oh my God, there's a tornado. And people's instincts, if you can believe this, was to get in their car. And some people drove literally into the storm. And it was just to get to a basement. So a lot of people drove into Martin City to watch the storm from the basement, and they could see everything unfolding, and it was devastating. I mean, the stories of these kids that watched this happen honestly really affected me. It was just incredible.
Well, I want to hear some of those stories too, because you said kids. I mean, you're talking about kids. You probably lost parents and loved ones and families, you know, throughout this storm. And as we're going through this, you know, terrible time now in our country's history, I think we're doing a pretty good job here in Kansas City of maintaining things, and everybody's kind of following the rules. But back then, when a natural disaster like that just kind of props up, and all of a sudden, 10 minutes earlier, you had a dad and now you don't anymore. I mean, it had to be devastating for you to hear some of these stories.
It was one of the hardest things I've ever done, because I just write, as you said earlier, I write about things that usually are old that I can't really talk to anybody who's still alive. And this is just not the case. This was something where I had to pick up the phone and talk to people and got stories, and people were more than willing to share. There's an author called, her name is Carolyn Glenn Brewer. She's written a couple books on the Ruskin Heights tornado. And she kind of helped me guided me into finding some people who were willing to talk to me. One of the things that I realized quickly, and because it was branded with the name Ruskin Heights, right? I really was under the impression that everyone died in Ruskin. I mean, I don't mean like all, I, what I mean by that is all the victims were from Ruskin. That's just not the case. The first victims were killed, about 6:30, at night. They sat down to dinner at the dinner table, and they were in their 80s. And I mean, the tornado just tore through and they were killed immediately. Two young girls were killed, out south of Olathe on the farm. The husband was killed inside the house, and then wife and two girls were found a quarter mile away from their home in a field. I mean, just awful. But really, the story that stuck to me the most was listening to Boy Scouts. So I have a 14-year-old Boy Scout named Jay Roberts, who is kind of a historian of Martin City. He grew up in Martin City, and he was a Boy Scout, and he was attending his sister's kindergarten graduation. Sounds so like, everybody loves graduations, right, Mom? Sure. I mean, they're just so fun. And he was 14. He's like, this sucks. He didn't want to go to the graduation. Right. And they had just built Martin City, the new school in Martin City. And he went to the graduation. Honestly, a lot of these people in Martin City hadn't been at that graduation, they would have died, because I mean, just on one street, 8 of 12 homes was leveled to the ground.
Wow.
So listening to him tell this story of him being inside the school, and the superintendent screaming, and the teachers, and the just the suction and the power of this tornado. Of course, a lot of people talk about how it sounds like a chugging engine. But really, it was the aftermath, because there were victims I talked to, people that lived, that saw like the butcher, Lowell Atkinson, who was a butcher. And you know where Jack-Stack is today, right?
Sure.
In Martin City. It would be kind of where Jack-Stack is today. Really, the main business area of Martin City at the time was really on Holmes. There was a lot of businesses on Holmes. And Lowell Atkinson ran the Martin City Market. Of course he did, you know. And right. And he was 43 years old. And somebody's like, there's a tornado coming. You got to, you know, come over here. And the people were yelling from the Methodist church across the street, like, come over and get, you know, come with us. Oh, I'm fine. He was not fine. Jay Roberts, who was in the Martin City School afterwards, the Boy Scouts, can you believe this? They took Boy Scouts, and Boy Scouts went out and did, went through the wreckage to try to find living or dead people. Mm-hmm. And they discovered Lowell Atkinson. He, I believe the refrigerator unit fell on top of him and he was killed. So I talked to the man. This is what's so interesting is I talked to Jay who found him, and I talked to his daughter who lived in Ruskin and, you know, found out obviously after the tornado that she lost her father. I think she was 7 when her dad passed away. I mean, it was just a devastating, and then there's crazy stories. You know, you hear these stories about the survival, and like there was an old guy who was, you know, kind of bedridden, and he was, they'd set up a cot in his living room because he couldn't, you know, go upstairs to his bedroom. And the tornado is barreling through, and this would have happened just behind where Jack-Stack is today. As the tornado's tearing through, his wife jumped, like throws herself on top of him to try to save him. And she's just like thrown out the door. Everything, including all the appliances, are just destroyed in the house. Like there's nothing left. And he was still on the cot, safe and sound. The tornadoes are just incredible. I mean, unbelievable, the power that they have.
Well, when we started out, you said you were asked to write about this. Why would somebody want this now all of a sudden to be brought back up? I mean, it's not like it's the 100th anniversary or the 50th anniversary or anything like that. What was the impetus for somebody saying, hey, we want you to research this and write about this story? I mean, it's fascinating. Don't get me wrong, but usually it's not something
kind of
that
depressing.
You would, yeah, but you know, but if it was a major anniversary or something right. like that, I could see, you know, why.
Well, actually I was asked, I had started writing for the Martin City Telegraph. I of course wrote my blog. I started writing for the Martin City Telegraph about almost 3.5 years ago. And the tornado's 60th anniversary was May 20th of 2017. Mm-hmm. And so my editor said, you know, hey, you know, people are always interested in tornadoes. You should write about the anniversary of the tornado. And what was really shocking to me wasn't just, so it was the 60th anniversary. And there was a big to-do on the 50th anniversary, obviously. What really surprised me is how many people I couldn't talk to. Because I couldn't make time for everybody. Everyone had wanted to talk about it. Everyone has a memory. If you lived in Kansas City and you have an inkling of a memory, everyone remembers what they were doing in May 20th, 1957. Even if you watched it from downtown Kansas City, everyone goes, I remember that day. It was such a huge day in not just weather history, because it is, it's a national weather history because of, we would have the warning systems we have today. But because of this tornado, it was the impetus of the warning systems that we have today, was because of this tornado. So I think it just so greatly affected so many people in Kansas City. They're mm-hmm. just, everyone wants to talk about it, especially because it's your childhood. Because, you know, the people sure. we're talking about are our parents' age, you know, and they're more than willing to talk about the devastation. And you could still see the effects of that tornado today.
You can still see that in Martin City?
You can. If you pay attention, you can see it. And I think
okay, well, tell me how, because I think that's interesting, because I think now, you know, people are listening. Maybe they go down to Martin City for a drive and say, oh, yeah, there it is. You can absolutely yeah. tell, you know.
Well, maybe one of the reasons.
You don't know, but when somebody points it out to you, you go, oh, yeah, look at that.
Well, the reason that you can kind of see where it was is because you go down to what we would call the old Main Street of Martin City, which is 135th Street. But
right.
when you're driving down and you're heading east and you cross railroad tracks and then you end up at Holmes. If you look, if you've ever noticed, and you've got Matt Moore, who's done an incredible job with Martin City Brewery, and all that business is on the left-hand side of the street, which would be on the north side of the street. Have you ever noticed there's nothing on the south side of the street?
Well, I mean, I noticed Jess and Jim's is over there.
Well,
right?
Jess and Jim's is there, but
and then
I'm talking
Sutherland's over there.
Sutherland's, which actually, yes, and it was actually a lumber yard back, which was a whole different reason of why it was devastating. Uh-huh. It was a lumber yard back. It's always been a lumber yard for the most part. So, you know, Sutherland's being there is kind of not too much of a surprise. But when you're driving down the street, there was a gas station on the left-hand side, which now is a, and most people would remember it was K&K Motor Service. It was a mobile gas station. But there were houses, and I mean like homes, not businesses, on the right-hand side of the street. And when you drive down Martin City now, you see the old buildings on the left side, and there's really nothing on the right side for a great deal of time until you get to Justin Jim's. That's because it was all destroyed in the tornado.
And they never rebuilt.
They never really rebuilt. Now, there were some homes that were torn down later, I want to be clear, that I have pictures of and things. So it's not like, but the other part is, if you look at Jess and Jim's, where you got the big old cow on top of the building, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at the back side of Jess and Jim's, it's not a perfect square. It's because the tornado took off the back half of it. So if you look at the top, it's etched. It's kind of got like a, you know, indention in the top. And that's not because it was built that way originally. And it wasn't Justin Jim's at the time. Justin Jim's was actually where Jack Sack is today. But it was, that building was chopped off a little bit at the top because of the power of the tornado. The fact that it missed Martin City partially, you know, it didn't hit it directly on. I mean, it would be just, there would be no Martin City had it, you know, but it did cross over and then was heading in its pattern, which was going northeast. Its pattern was on the opposite side of the street of where you would have Martin City Brewery and things. But you can tell if you look at that building now, when you drive by, don't look at the cow, look at the backside of the building, because it was chopped off because of the tornado.
So what was in that building at the time? And I'm curious as to why Jess and Jim's kind of moved into a building that was partially destroyed by a tornado.
Oh, they, you know, well, actually, once there were two different businesses. One, it used to be a skating rink or a pool hall on the top floor, swear to God. Yeah, and now
ice skating or roller skating?
Roller skating. But there used to be parties on the top floor, and then there were several different, like, general stores and stores like that. And I believe that's what was on the main floor. Across the street from where Jess and Jim's is, and just over, was the gas station, which originally was the blacksmith shop of Martin City, which, if you think about it, blacksmiths kind of evolved into auto mechanics, you know? So it's no surprise that that business that was once a blacksmith shop developed into a gas station, which developed into, you know, some people tinkering. And that gas station was leveled to the ground, and the guy that owned it and his and one other held on to the wheels of a tractor, and the whole building just blew up. And like, they literally, the only thing left was like just the shell of the building and the two guys just holding onto a tractor wheel. Like, they barely survived.
So holding onto the tractor wheel, I'm assuming, and I could be wrong about that, giving them extra weight to hold them to the ground. So the tornado, really?
Yeah. And I talked to the family and got photos. That was the other thing, is that there's several photos and different, you know, memorabilia of the Ruskin Heights tornado that existed. But what's so cool about why I love what I do is because so many people think about it. This was such a huge event, you know, people took pictures of it. Mm-hmm. And so there were so many people that lived through this tornado that took pictures of their own homes and what they saw afterward, that I got to publish for the first time all these photos that had never been seen before of, you know, just, you know, the 10-year-old kid who grabs the family, you know, camera and starts taking pictures of his neighborhood. I mean, there's an old house on Grandview or in Martin City that I wrote about at one point. It was built in 1904. It was actually built by the blacksmith that I was just talking about. And this home, like, they've always gardened and all of this. And another victim or another person who survived the tornado talked about how for years, do you just like put your shovel in the ground and they just pull up iron because the power of that tornado just drove stuff into the ground. So for years, people would just pull big pieces of iron and metal from the ground that just were left over from the Ruskin Heights tornado. Like, this thing was no joke. 200-mile-an-hour winds, ripped up concrete, destroyed everything in its path. But then, you know, it would destroy four houses and then one house would be just left alone, of course. And, you know, talking to victims, that people just jumped in there. They literally tried to out chase the tornado, tried to run away from it because they didn't have basements. I mean, it's just, the power of tornadoes is just unbelievable to me. I don't know if you've ever been in the middle of one, But I mean, there's something about them that you just never forget, especially if you literally had the National Guard have to move in and your town is devastated because of it. I mean, 44 people lost their lives in the Ruskin Heights tornado.
I actually had her outrun a tornado with Jen one time in Oklahoma. Yeah, we were driving back from Dallas after her friend got married, and we're like, oh, let's just drive back instead of flying. You know, we'll take a nice day for ourselves. And you know, we got to Oklahoma, and right before you got to the Kansas border, you know, where Route 60 turns to the right to the east and kind of goes through the Native American reservations out there, Pawhuska, you know, that kind of area. There's a tornado up north, you know, and then all of a sudden there's one out south. And so we're in the middle. I'm like, the only thing we got to do is go east. We drove east as fast as we could through the Native American reservation and up into Kansas, and we were able to eventually outrun that thing and have kind of like finally petered out. But I know how that was. I was scared shitless, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And it was one of the more terrifying events of our lives. And I mean, I think, you know, right when you cross the Oklahoma border, there is kind of where we were, to give you a rough estimate. By the time we reached like north of Independence, Kansas, and we were on like 75 maybe or 59 headed towards Lawrence that way, that was the first time we actually breathed. And that was a long ride. I mean, that's a long ride in nice weather, let alone in weather that, you know, you're trying to outrun a tornado the entire time. So I could only imagine back then driving like an Edsel and trying to get out of the way of a tornado in the 50s, what that must have been like. There's no way you could have outrun that thing.
Yeah, I mean, and I went through a similar situation that you were talking about in Oklahoma myself. Poor Oklahoma, man, they got it bad down there. But, you know, I mean, when you talk about the power of a tornado, it's really no joke, as you said, and you're on a scale. That's why when people go, how devastating was this tornado? Where does it rank? Everybody wants me to rank it. I'm like, well, you know, it's a different scale at the time. You know, we didn't have the EF scale until, I think, the 2000 and something. And so it's really hard to rank it. You just know that it was over 200 mile per hour winds. There were cars that were twisted around light poles. The real iconic photo from this tornado was the gym at Ruskin High School. The letters, only letters that were left, spelled ruin, just R-U-I-N. Everything else was ripped off. I mean, and that picture was in unbelievable photo that really says it all. But to, like you said, you got these kids that remember their dads, like, and this is at the height of dinner hour. This is going through, there's kindergarten graduations, people are playing, you know, they have baseball practice, everybody's doing something. Yeah. You know, it's like after dinner hour, and now you have the graduation at 7 o'clock. Well, the tornado literally tore through Martin City, I think it's 7:15. You are 7:30. You have a warning of something sounds funny. I mean, unless somebody has their eye to the sky, which of course every dad or a lot of dads thought they were, you know, the weather reporters at the time.
Sure.
Yeah, they're standing outside, you know, probably drinking a beer and watching the sky, like looking a little funny. And right. I did hear stories of people's dads who did that. They remember like them doing that. And then it's like, get in the car. We're going to try to outdrive this. I don't know how that happened. I mean, like I said, the stories that I heard, you know, one of the last victims that passed away. And actually, the other thing that I found interesting is that it was hard for me to find a victim list. And for something that's, you know, happened, which I would consider somewhat current, 1957, I figured there'd be a pretty legit list of people. Mm-hmm. And there is a memorial at right by Ruskin High School that is the Ruskin Heights tornado. And there's a list of people on there, but I found when I started doing my research, cause I try to be as thorough as possible, I'm like, the names are spelled wrong on it. The ages are spelled wrong on it. I mean, are incorrect. So I actually went through and I pulled every single death certificate of every single person that passed away from the tornado. I looked at their headstones. I compared because make sure the spelling was correct and got their ages written down. And I listed them in order from the first person killed to the last, which was really tough. I mean, ages range from the 80s to 4 months old. And, you know, to do that was tough, but I felt like I kind of became married to this story in a way, you know, like I felt like it was my job to try to tell it the right way. So doing that and then figuring out like, because the death certificates, you read what, you know, cause of death. Sometimes it says just tornado, but sometimes it says like metal to head, and I mean, just awful. So, but one of the last victims was, I remember you were talking about where Sutherland's was, right?
Yeah.
It was a lumber yard at the time. Badger Lumber Company was there. And so you can imagine a lumber yard and then wind. Mm-mm. That's not a good combination. And so a mother and a daughter tried to run into a ditch because there was no place else to go. They were probably crossing the street. And this is right across from Martin City, the Methodist Church, kind of where Jack's Tech is. And they're trying to cross the street, and a little girl was watching from the basement of the Methodist Church and had windows. And she was watching this happen as one of the girl, the woman, the 20-something-year-old daughter, had a piece of lumber just go straight through her. Just like, you know, killed her instantly.
Oh.
And then the mom was thrown about 100 yards down the road. And found, and she was basically in the hospital and died in August. So she tried, you know, she was the last victim, was the last person who survived, you know, from the survival was this woman in Martin City. And it really was interesting for me to learn that all these victims, you know, it started taking lives in Kansas. It's not like it just happened in Ruskin. It just got the name Ruskin Heights because really, if you look at the pictures, the damage is really easy to see in, of course, Ruskin. It lifted around Knobtown and Raytown area. That's where the tornado lifted and just disappeared. And then the, you know, the clouds went away and a little bit of sunlight at the end of the day. And then, you know, and then there was rescue missions all across the city trying to recover who they could. I mean, it was awful.
And really, it's the worst tornado we've ever seen in Kansas City, and the worst in Missouri up until 2011 when the Joplin tornado happened.
Yeah, it was the worst tornado in Missouri history. There's some other ones I've written about, one that went through downtown Kansas City. We could talk about that another time. Not that devastating, but, well, devastating because it went through downtown Kansas City.
What year was that?
1886.
Okay.
It went through downtown Kansas City. There are some other tornadoes that, you know, but there's usually, you know, if you've ever looked at like what tornadoes are the worst, there's usually an outbreak of tornadoes. Have you ever seen that where they're like, there were three really bad days in a row where there were 114 tornadoes or whatever it is. So you see a lot of those outbreaks that happen. Joplin tornado was May 22nd, and it did take over as the most devastating tornado in Missouri history. But before that, because 158 people died, before that it was the Ruskin Heights tornado. And like you said, this was the most devastating tornado to go through Kansas City. And there's a lot of similarities. The deadliest tornadoes in Kansas City history in general all have been in May, too.
Yeah, it's a rough month for tornadoes, and we're in the middle of that right now, which, you know, when something bad happens, you're like, all right, what good can we take from this? Like we're looking at right now, make the best out of the situation that you're in. But I also think, you know, from this tornado, it probably helped us get some kind of, you know, warning systems in place that we never had before. Maybe without this, we have more deadly tornadoes, and not because more tornadoes are forming, but more people aren't getting out of the way of what's going on.
Well, and that's just it. I think we get a lot of times victims got in the way of themselves because it's always, we always know there's those people, even if that tornado siren goes off, when they go outside first, like, maybe it's not right, or I want to see, you know, I mean, we're always curious, but yeah, we had nuclear, of course, you know, of course, the Red Scare era and the fact that the Cuban Missile Crisis later, you've got in the 1950s, the real fear wasn't weather, the real fear was nuclear attack. Mm-hmm. I mean, so they had started installing in larger cities, and not out in Ruskin, by the way, not in Martin City, but like Kansas City. They had start installing what they called, you know, nuclear warning signs or sirens. Yeah. And those were already established in cities. And it was literally for warning of a nuclear attack. And after this tornado, it was like, we need to warn people before. Like, we have to warn people. And it was the Ruskin Heights tornado. This is not a joke. It was the tornado in Kansas City that actually established the warning system we know today through the National Weather Service, which was the Weather Bureau at the time. And so they use those nuclear sirens that had already been installed to go ahead and use as the warning system. They already had them, and then they just started building them out to, you know, suburbs and eventually, obviously, as far as they could. But that all started because of the tornado in May 20th, 1957.
I hope you were able to take away a lot from that storm that rolled through South Kansas City. Next time you're driving through Martin City, take a look around and see some of the buildings that used to be there and some that are still standing and how they changed from that massive storm.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.